Oh my god.
Yeah, still doesn't feel natural.
Yeah.
I wish, you know, the rumor just attacked when a meeting starting.
Okay.
So, you can start. It was your idea,
I
so.
should start? No, so I thought that we might speak a little bit of speech coding because nobody is doing here speech coding, and I would like to have some maybe feedback because except me, I'm supposed to do some speech coding stuff here with Hinek, but you know that a little bit at least that it's based on some, let's say, Hilbert transforms using longer temporal context and deriving some parameters which would be transmitted to decoder. And so it's a little bit different than the stuff which people are using now, which is like LPC based. And but we are at the beginning with everything more or less, so still we can't encode a speech, but of course there are many problems which we still didn't solve. And the biggest one is quite similar to LPC stuff where people still don't know how to exactly encode the carrier or the source signal. You know what to do with the envelope or how to approximate the envelope, let's say, when you have got.
Maybe is the whiteboard working? Or not?
Oh, you mean that it would be nice to
Maybe
learn at least.
show us
Yeah,
the
at least
general
on
sort of
paper.
Well, maybe
You
I
can
wrote
write
it
it
on
on
the paper, yeah.
yeah,
I
you can write it on
can.
paper. You can
Okay.
just write it on the paper.
So what we are doing now, yeah?
Yeah.
You mean? Okay, everybody knows LPC stuff, how it works,
Right,
so I don't
so.
have to present anything more or less. But it's more or less very simple. We have, let's say, at the beginning there is some speech signal. What we are, we might see it in a very simple way that we are using some Hilbert transform at the beginning to create analytic signal. The analytic signal is the signal which is a complex which you can create from the
Right, right.
real some sequence. And if you apply a Hilbert transform on that on such a speech signal like real trajectory, then you get a complex signal. And if you take just the amplitude, then you get Hilbert envelope called. So oh, well, I don't know. Yeah, let's say.
So is this different from the original PLP2 stuff then, is there?
Yeah, it's not PLP at
Because that's
all.
what you started with, wasn't it? The stuff that Marius.
No, but Marius is. It's
No,
similar stuff, no? Marius is
it's
also
pretty much the
using
same.
Hilbert transform and.
Okay.
I know what you mean with the PLP. We are applying PLP with some iteration with this one approach. So they
Okay.
were doing some smoothing of a spectrogram in
Yeah.
two ways.
He's
One was
parameterizing it
right.
both
Both.
temporally and across
Right,
the
but
spectrum.
PLP is
Yeah.
using just the spectral direction. Let's say you are doing for every 20 millisecond
Yeah.
processing one feature vector. Here
Yeah.
you are processing one spectral band, frequency band,
Yeah,
right? So
okay.
it's different direction
Yeah.
which we are using. But anyway, this is very simple. So applying that absolute operation, you get Hilbert envelope, and of course there is the phase. So it's just the complex operation, and that's more or less all what we are doing. So now what we know is how to approximate that Hilbert envelope. We are applying that Hilbert, what is the Marius stuff.
Yeah, to
So he
that.
knows
Yep,
how
yep, yep.
to encode the Hilbert envelope
Some
using
kind of DCT or
like
again?
LSFs or LPC.
No.
You're applying again some linear prediction model after
Yeah,
that.
but it's a linear. It's a.
But
It's a different linear prediction
right,
model, isn't it? It's a complex linear
it's a little
prediction
bit
or
different.
whatever.
It's not applied in a frequency domain. So instead of classical LPC domain where you have a spectrum, let's say
No.
something like that, and you're applying some linear prediction model which is trying to approximate the spectrum, right? So
Yeah.
this is frequency. In our case, we are trying to approximate kind of instantaneous energy.
Yeah.
So if this is a time and you get one frequency band, you can see something like this.
Yeah.
And we are trying to approximate that envelope, which is
Yeah.
That Hilbert and Wolf.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So again, we know what to, more or less, we know what to do with Hilbert envelope. We know that we can apply neural prediction model and it works pretty well.
Okay.
But if you want to really well reconstruct the speed signal or the...
You need the phase.
You need also the phase signal, which is in some sense quite simple for voice speed signal, let's say.
Because
but
you use linear phase or...?
The phase, no, you... It's a phase or you can even call it like a carrier. So the carrier is, if you know, amplitude modulation, right?
Yeah.
You might see something like there is really one cosine, which is really with quite
same frequency.
Well, it depends
right.
on how this. I mean, you're talking, just the carrier. Okay,
yeah.
That's not necessarily phase, but if you're using some
it's
sort
called
of
like the
sinusoidal coding,
phase.
It's
right,
phase.
Right,
yeah.
Exactly. So this is the signal which you also have to somehow encode or transmit from a coder to decoder in order to resynthesize it.
So, sort of bit rate do you get for the encoding of the Hilbert transform? The spectrogram.
What do you mean? Again?
What sort of coding do you get so far for the...
For this one?
No.
The linear prediction model?
Yeah.
Well, it's just linear prediction, classical way. I mean... Oh, okay. Well, if you want to see it in more details...
No, but what sort of bit rate do you get? Is it... do you have any sort of idea of what sort of bandwidth?
Oh, you mean...
Mean bit rate.
Yeah, bit rate, you mean.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, sure. So... More or less, what we are using now is, let's say, something like 1.2 kilobits per second for that Hilbert envelope.
Okay, and that's with a fully optimized sort of compression scheme,
it's
or that's just the raw data? Or
it's again roughly estimated somehow,
okay,
but
yeah.
We still know that we can go down.
Yeah, sure. You just cut out four
right.
bands and just use interpolation or whatever.
Exactly.
Yeah.
We are using
so
like 15 bands.
Okay, this with the full spectrum basically being used.
Right, but they are integrated into 15 bands using a classical way like in MFCCs or MPLP. You just apply some those triangular windows
or
something like that
.
In order to get really like just 15 bands, right?
Yeah.
And each band is then processed independently.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So for one band, we more or less have like 100 bits.
Okay, that's quite good. So,
for Hilbert envelope.
And Inet was showing me how scalable it is in terms of you can take half the bands away and still get decent performance.
Right.
You take three quarters of them away, it starts
to
degrade, but it's still intelligible,
right.
That sort of thing.
Yeah.
Okay. And that's without doing any sort of prediction of what the missing bands might be, right? You just leave them out.
Right. That's what we did.
You could be able to do some sort of code book.
Yeah, sure.
Missing data
sort of
stuff.
Yeah. There are many things we didn't try at all, but yeah, exactly.
Okay.
But now what I'm really trying to do is somehow approximate that carrier signal to do something with the carrier. There are many simple things which you can do, like quantization, scalar quantization, for example.
It would be nice to have a scalable scheme, though, wouldn't it? Like, because you've got a nice scalable scheme for the coding of the smooth spectrum.
Right.
It'd be nice to have some sort of scalable coding scheme for the voice signal as well, right?
You mean something like that kelp coding system where you are, what is exactly scalable system, what do you mean?
Well, different bit rates for the actual excitation as
this
well.
Because
it'd be nice, let's say if you had 1200
for
bits for the smooth spectrum and 1200 bits for the voice.
But I think this approach can do that because you really can split it into several bands,
sure.
You can decide how many bands you want, more or less.
I have a question. Is the scale linear or is MEL scale, like in MLC?
Yeah, this is a bar scale.
It's a bar scale,
MEL scale. So it's being more wider for higher frequencies, and of course the space.
The overlapping is different, right?
Right, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But my sense is that it is not so much important still. I mean, it doesn't matter if you use mass scale or bar scale, but...
No, just as long as it's some sort of...
Right,
non-linear.
But that's what we are using, yeah.
Okay.
Actually, we are using just Gaussian windows here instead of those triangulars.
Okay.
Because they are more...
Smooth or...?
Better than for decoding, it's better to play with them because they are not zero anywhere, you know?
They are.
They are approaching, or in limit they are in zero, but... Actually, they are not, so you don't have to care about some zero values here.
Okay.
But more or less, it doesn't matter. Yeah, we are using just Gaussian numbers.
Okay.
So after you're doing LSF, so like, I mean, how you're finally
okay, so
encoding
those that the Hilbert envelope is approximated by linear prediction. So you have RPC coefficients which you can transcribe into LSFs, which
and
are
then vector quantize.
Right,
yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
So first you apply these triangular filters and then do LPC coding, or like?
Right, exactly. So first the approach is quite simple. So at the beginning, we apply DCT in order to get to the frequency domain.
Yeah.
Then you apply those triangular
filters
or Gaussian windows.
Yeah.
So this is done for 1 second, 8,000 samples for 8 kilohertz sampling frequency, right? So for such DCT trajectory, you apply those Gaussian windows. And then, so you split into frequency subbands, and then each one frequency subband is more or less
again, you do the LP analysis on each
right,
subband.
Yeah. Right, exactly. You just apply LP,
yeah,
so autocorrelation, let's say, or you can do power spectrum, whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you, for each one, you get LSFs here.
Yeah. So how many LSFs you're using?
Well, I'm using now like 20 LSFs per 1 second. Per one frequency band.
So, okay.
So but you...
15.
How many bands you're
using? 20 times 15, isn't it?
You're not skipping any bands? Or like
no, if I just skip...
15 into 20 then. Like
so 20 LSFs, each one is is quantized by 4 or 5 bits.
Okay. So it's 300...
Of what? 300
I
bits?
Mean, it's total of 300 sort of parameters
per
second.
But phase, you're not encoding anything. Phase, you're directly transmitting them.
You mean this phase, the Hilbert carrier, or
the
no, of course,
phase of Hilbert.
You're not carrying, transmitting that at all, really, at this point in time, are you?
You're not transmitting at all.
Well, there are many things you can do. We don't. What first thing what you can already do is just to replace it by Gaussian
noise.
So you can already use like in a LPC system, right? Exactly.
Yeah.
Or you can replace it by some cosine, one cosine generated in a central frequency of that Gaussian window.
Or one of these glottal pulse things,
yeah,
and just use basic LPC 10 style.
Right.
Yeah. Which is probably, I mean, if you were going to aim for like a very low rate code of like 500 bits per second, I guess that's probably fine.
So what is the self standard? No, like it's 2 kilobits per second?
The lowest standard is MELP, I think, which is 2400. It's been implemented at 1200 bits per second using more complicated quantization schemes and stuff like that.
1200?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, it's possible.
I saw they used matrix quantization on the LP, on the LSF parameters or whatever.
Yeah, but
I mean, that's quite, it becomes quite computationally
expensive.
But I mean, I imagine the same sort of approach could be.
Well, I'm just comparing with LPC 10 standard, which is like classical LPC, a little bit optimized. So then there is, I think, 2.4 kilobits per second the bit rate for that.
Yeah, that's the same. 20 MELP's a lot better quality than
Yeah, definitely.
But this is codex, right?
This is,
you have codex.
No,
book, so
I mean, LPC 10 is just LPC.
Oh, it's not codex.
No.
I think.
Just noise or just those impulses.
I think CELP or KELP or however you pronounce it. It's about 4800, I think.
Yeah, it's around 1 kilobyte.
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
well, the standard's
4800. Yeah,
4.8.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why I think even GSM and all these G729
are based around that.
Yeah. On based on CELP. At least it gives.
It's not terribly interesting, really.
But still, they use codebook, no? So that's
so
which may be better than like using just random noise.
Well, you've got a bunch of options, haven't you? You can use a code excited, or you could use a...
Well, more or less what we didn't do is analyze by synthesis, right? So that's what CELP is doing, right?
Mm-hmm. No,
so,
sure.
Yeah, so this is what we really didn't do, and that might help a lot, of course.
Yeah, but what's more interesting?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean,
that's the question.
I suspect there's something like CELP, you're going to get a lot higher bandwidth, aren't you? I mean, it's a higher bandwidth standard.
It will be,
Yeah.
For example, what I also did was a simple peak picking algorithm. So if you take a look on the spectrum of that carrier signal, which is more or less like the cosine, if you really take a look on that, but it is kind of frequency shifted cosine or frequency modulated cosine.
Okay.
Right. So the frequency is a little bit changing.
Yeah.
Or, of course, the amplitude is not constant all the time. It should be theoretically, but practically it's not. So what you can see for 1 second signal, you, more or less, you really might see some like one impulse there or spectral line. For
okay.
But usually there are many others which are quite small, but they are quite important. If you don't transmit them, then the signal is quite robotic or something like that. So if you really transmit just one spectral line. But this is what you can do, and you can understand pretty well. The signal is audible, or
okay, so
if you really just
but
find one line, one spectrum, the dominant one in the spectrum of the carrier, Hilbert carrier, and you just transmit this parameter.
Because it's a bit tricky, isn't it? It's not like a standard. I'm just thinking, I mean, what sort of option? It's not like you can't just do standard, you know, inverse filtering for reconstruction or anything like that, can you?
It's even easier, because what you have to do is just divide the. You just multiply that Hilbert analog by that Hilbert carrier. That's all.
Oh, okay. And then you just do the inverse FFT or whatever. Okay. The
so,
I mean,
so
the
you
other
just multiply that one Hilbert carrier, which is transcribed by LSFs.
Yeah.
By that, this one IFFT signal, so.
But that's going to be susceptible to having phase problems, isn't it? When you.
You mean the phase of that. Of that carrier.
Yeah.
Output signal.
Of course, I tried to play also with that, and I found that it doesn't matter so much what is the phase, because we are using just 1 second window.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
So of course there might be some disturb when you concatenate those segments together, but then the phase might be important.
Yeah.
But otherwise, I mean, I didn't find anything important with the phase, like, great, keep the phase zero and it works. Or
And I mean, there is research that's been published showing, you know, speech reconstruction from the, essentially the spectrogram without phase information.
Right.
Yeah.
But it's again a little bit different, because they are doing this in a frequency domain.
Yes.
But this is in time domain.
Yes, but I mean, you can reconstruct the entire
right the spectrogram.
Spectrogram from that, can't you?
Yeah.
So you could do it that way.
Because
I'm just thinking, there's heaps of options. Like if you'd be exactly the same as sinusoidal coding or something like that.
Right.
All you need is the reconstruction of the spectrogram in order to estimate the harmonic amplitudes. So.
Exactly. What we can also do very simply is just to get the magnitude spectrogram using this approximation without a carrier, just Hilbert envelope.
Yeah.
But you just get it in this way, in the way of Rouse, right? But you can also get the short time Fourier transform.
Just by refitting.
Right. Just classical frame by frame algorithm, 20 milliseconds. But you keep just the faces instead of magnitudes. And you can put this together.
Okay.
Right? Mm-hmm. And it works pretty well. Then the signal is not whispered. And you really hear that there is the voiceness in the signal.
Mm.
Okay.
But of course, the quality is not so good still. But you can use it for like 2-3 kilobits per second, and it works.
Yeah.
Mm.
But that's the big thing at the moment, isn't it? If the encoding rate's 2 kilobits per second for the excitation component of the signal, it doesn't matter how efficient your encoding of the spectrogram is. You're always going to have a relatively high bit rate.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Anyway, so maybe it would be nice if you tell us what you did with the speech coding, because I didn't see any of PhD thesis of you, I think, so if you did something. So maybe you'd be interesting at least.
Well, one could argue it's a field that's quite a sort of a niche these days, isn't it?
But
it's more towards industry.
In standards.
Because I worked in an industry for like a small time, but there they used to implement all these coders, JSON and ITU standards.
So you were, when did you do that?
No, just before my PhD. I did for like 2 months.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, but the industry is really a big deal. Like, so they work on a lot of these standards.
I think so, yeah.
Well, did you say?
But mostly they're all based on cell pattern, like mainly.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
Is it Nokia is being sued in the US for their tri-band usage? Because
you mean using that CDMA?
No, GSM, because I don't have GSM in the US. Well, they didn't have GSM in the US.
Yeah, it's not GSM, right? It's
CDMA.
Well, CDMA is another level, I think.
No, CDMA is there, but now slowly they're introducing GSM also, no?
Well, that's tri-band.
Yeah, GSM tri-band.
Yeah,
frequencies are different.
Yeah, exactly. And apparently Nokia's in a bit of trouble over that one, but...
Yeah, no, it's really big
competition. I think there is a lot of money in that.
Yeah. Should have been a lawyer.
Like speech recognition, of course, it's very interesting, but people don't use it so much as...
Well, that's...
Just coding, just telephoning, right?
I mean, coding is a much more sort of...
Standard, maybe.
It boils down to just mathematics to a large
right,
extent,
yeah.
doesn't it?
Yeah.
It's just a sort of... It's, you know...
Yeah.
Communications,
right.
Sort of.
So, where do you think your thing is useful, in CDMA or GSM?
No,
I think maybe in CDMA it may be.
Well, what
CDMA
we were thinking about is CDMA. I mean, there
more
is
time domain. They're doing only.
Well, the problem is this with this application, or it doesn't have to be problem, but one constraint is that we are processing 1 second of the signal.
Oh, okay.
You can go down, of course, but then you are losing a little bit of the bitrate, let's say.
Yeah,
right?
Sure.
Yeah.
So, but there are many applications where you really can use it because you don't care about algorithmic delay, 1 second algorithmic delay, like
sure.
for, I don't know, if instead of SMS, you can really have some other channel.
Yeah, sure.
Where
push
you just,
to talk and stuff like
right.
that, yeah.
So...
And I mean, as you say, I mean, that delay is, I mean, you can... squash that delay to some extent,
right?
I think as far as the delayless coding goes, I don't think you can probably do much more than what's already been achieved, because to get higher compression you have to take advantage of redundancy over longer
right.
time spans. So
but even already these long length telephones, they already have delay, no? At least half a second.
Yeah, sure, but I mean that's transmission delay, not the algorithmic delay. If you add those
right.
together, you end up with a nightmare scenario. Yeah.
But mobile?
We might have someone else joining our meeting soon. I don't know, I mean, you tried sinusoidal coding-based approaches, didn't you?
Which one?
Sinusoidal coding.
Well, but the sinusoidal coding is usually, at least what I think or what I know is when you are doing sinusoidal coding, it means you just take the speech signal at the beginning, right? And you are trying to find
harmonics and
To find the harmonics
sure.
in a temporal domain, right?
Yeah, but I mean the thing is you need part of the parameter set for that is are the harmonic amplitudes.
Right.
Now, one way of compressing the harmonic amplitudes is just storing a smooth spectrum, and then you can interpolate.
Yeah,
you can just pick the harmonic amplitudes on that spectrum when you reconstruct.
Right.
On that smooth version of the spectrum.
More or less, I did it. Maybe different way, but
kind
of algorithm like trying to find out the strongest or the most dominant peaks in the spectrum.
Yeah.
Which is
but
more
maybe
or less
the bitrate is the problem, no? Like what it's really.
It's quite high bitrate, but I mean, once we get it, maybe it's something that's scalable.
But you know, the
yeah, maybe you can just see how many harmonics. He was using 20, I think. Like, yeah, maybe you can try to reduce.
Well, I mean, you can use as many harmonics as you want. I mean, he was just using the fundamental frequency.
Right.
And if you're doing a smooth spectrum representation of the harmonic amplitudes, then you only need to store. The fundamental frequency,
right.
And then all these
and the maximum voice frequency, and everything
and
else
then you
can
do
be
multiples of
yeah.
So and then but then the only tricky thing that we hadn't figured out was the phase information. But you can still get basically if you do phase unwrapping and all of these other tricks, you end up with some sort of phase representation which is
some sort of
monotonically decreasing.
Yeah.
If it's unwrapping, you mean.
Unwrapped.
Yeah.
So I mean, it's something that you could conceivably represent in some sort of
some
low
function,
sort of low bitrate representation, I guess.
Right. Yeah.
And then maybe you'd need some sort of correction to correct minor phase discontinuities at some point in time.
I also play with that. And for example, what I found is, well, in this case, we are not trying to encode the speech signal. We are trying to encode some carrier, which is much easier, I would say.
Yeah, sure.
You can see that even.
Yeah, okay.
So,
Well, I was trying to encode the phases, so I just found that 2 bits is enough for that, and you really don't hear the difference.
Okay.
So if you keep all the spectral lines
yeah.
as they were there,
yeah.
but you are just quantizing with 2 bits or 3 bits for amplitude, 2 bits for phase, so it's okay.
Okay.
The problem is that you have to transmit many of them.
Yeah,
because
sure,
there is not
sure.
just one dominant component, but usually more others which are quite small.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Or what you have to do, then you have to decrease
the size of
not 1 second, but you have to go down, because then you can get just voice part and a voice part. You know,
yeah.
1 second it's usually mixed, right, somehow together. Mm.
But you don't do any voice on voice decision.
Not now, no.
No,
yeah.
But
yeah. That's even an advantage, I think.
You
want to
avoid
have
choices.
Yeah.
And we don't want to do that,
decisions.
Yeah.
Because in
science
total modeling, it's really another issue. Like
well, that's
yeah.
one of
right.
the big problems with
yeah.
LPCA 10,
yeah.
for instance.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, sure.
It stinks
yeah.
because this hard.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then you have to combine all these
right.
harmonic model and noise models. So again, you may end up some joining.
But for example, what we also found is that if you use just the Hilbert envelope, that one which is trying to approximate that instantaneous energy in some low band, like around 200 hertz, and you take a look on the signal, on the trajectory, you can see that it works like kind of voice detector.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
sure.
Because for low energies, there is usually noise.
Yeah.
For high energies, there is kind of a harmonicity.
Yeah.
So it
yeah.
works pretty well for that. So we might use this one.
But
information
that
for
that,
but
200. This is what they use. With, like they do use this for
yeah, I think so.
For
yeah.
Pitch marking
mm-hmm.
in speech. So this is what
yeah,
Alan Black's
yeah.
code uses. But
yeah.
it's very speaker dependent on what sort of bandwidth you look at this Hilbert envelope.
Right. Uh-huh.
Depending on the pitch, depending on the person,
mm-hmm.
you'll get a different amount of smoothing at a certain sort of.
Yeah.
So I mean, you know, if it's a female speaker, for instance,
that's true. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's
yeah.
you have to tune a lot of parameters, like
yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. That's a problem. Sure.
But anyway, you don't really need hard decisions, no, like voice to voice. So maybe it may help.
That
you,
would
but
be
it,
nice
yeah.
not to have anything like
yeah.
that.
Yeah, but from memory, that basic script that they had wasn't very
yeah.
effective. I mean, maybe if you did some sort of initial first guess and then.
Right.
And then chose your smoothing factor based on that.
Because, yeah,
you
yeah.
know, selecting any particular point of what the pitch is at the point is maybe inaccurate, but if you
mm-hmm.
estimated it over a second, you should be able to get a decent
right.
estimate,
exactly.
I think.
But do you really need it, or like voice?
Well, I don't know. Maybe if we really
yeah,
want to improve the quality, then we will need it. I don't know.
Yeah. But it's not really, you don't need to specify at each point. It's voice.
Not now.
No.
Yeah, well, I'm gonna have a time next month or in 3 weeks, so I'll try to play some examples there.
Yeah, well, it'd be nice to really see what you're actually trying to reconstruct here.
What we are trying to reconstruct.
This carrier signal, what it really.
How does
looks,
it look like?
Yeah. And you did say it looks like a frequency modulated
yeah,
cosine.
Yeah, otherwise.
Hmm.
It's kind of not frequency, let's say amplitude modulation, where you have just the carrier and that modulation signal. Right?
But you're saying even frequency is also shifting, no?
Well, it
yeah.
have to be,
because
pitch
yeah.
shifts.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah,
yeah,
yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. So then, yeah, then it's not exactly amplitude modulation. So
yeah, yeah.
It's in between, maybe.
It's in between, exactly. So it's not this or that, but
yeah.
still, yeah. But anyway, what also the another approach, which is possible to use, the other is one to keep the phase like this one, two spectrograms, one the phase and one the magnitude.
Yeah.
And well, I can again play it, and it works on 2 kilobits per second.
That's what Marius did, no? But he was keeping all the phase in.
No, what he was doing, he was using a force speech recognition. What I.
No, but
I
even
know,
his code, like he
no,
just.
No, no, it was.
He didn't
know.
Do anything. He just transmitted. That's why he
for
was aiming for.
Speech coding, you mean?
He's not really kind of doing speech coding, but he wants to do it on music, so. He doesn't really care about the bandwidth, so he want to have the quality.
I don't know.
Yeah, but even especially the audio CDs and that's why he was telling like yeah, at least even 10 kb, 20 kilobits also is okay.
Right. Yeah.
But he's not touching phase at all. I think he's just transmitting all the phase and then.
Mm-hmm. Well, for
but
example,
he's
this
encoding
phase
the envelope. Yeah.
Right. Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah. I think so. There are more papers which are using this approach, like trying to. Encode the magnitude spectrum
and then leaving the phase. Yeah.
Leaving the phase, or you just simply can again the phase can be replaced by the noise, which is pretty good. So that's the bandwidth variable approach. So if you really don't have a bandwidth, You just can replace it by noise and it works. Of course, then it doesn't sound as the original because it's more whispered or whatever, but you can understand well.
Mm-hmm.
And for example, if you mention this one, approach with the trajectory of the face, under face trajectory, I also use because you can do it here when you get into this domain where you apply or you're trying to compute power spectrum in order to, let's say that this kind of trajectory doesn't fit this in frequency or time domain, but here you are trying to compute to do linear prediction, so you're just doing FFT, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then applying power in order to get to power domain, and then IFFT, right?
Yeah,
so you get the autocorrelation
coefficients.
So before you're applying power spectrum, you can again get the, you have
the
complex
the
frequency or complex spectrum, you can get the phase, right?
Mm.
Yeah.
And the phase look quite similar like this, so you might see it is
like
more or less like a line.
Yeah, and it does start to get a little bit
right
non-linear towards the end, but normally that's that's when the components are not actually probably going to be audible anyway in voice speech, right? So,
right.
Yeah.
But this phase is different from your carrier.
Yeah, it is very different. Yeah.
Because you're
then
just doing on your.
You're doing in different domain.
Yeah.
This is in frequency
like
domain. This is in time domain. And it is
quite
sensible to any quantization. What I found. Really, it looks like the line. So you just say, okay, let's put the line there.
Yeah.
But it doesn't work. Well, you can understand, but.
Yeah, sure.
You can hear that there are many.
Because any sort of error in
right,
that line
exactly.
is transmitted, is realized in as a
right,
phase error.
Right.
Right? Yeah.
And the another problem is that it's not bandwidth variable, so you cannot say that this part will be just the noise, which you can do here in this error approach. So that's why I didn't play with that so more, because I found there are more disadvantages than the advantages of this approach. So that's why.
But even you can use that phase directly.
You mean
but
this one?
Yeah,
if you take just the original phase and.
But this is phase of your spectrum, no? Like it's not.
Right.
Time
yeah, it's not a phase.
Of your signal, it's not.
Yeah.
So then it's very tricky, like how.
No, you can again put that envelope with this phase together, because.
But still, you get only the magnitude of your Hilbert envelope. You
no, no, you g- no, you get the.
Phase slices like.
Yeah, you get the complex spectrum. With this.
No, but you started with Hilbert envelope, no? Like magnitude.
No,
of Hilbert
no,
envelope.
I started with the
magnitude
DCT.
No, before DCT, you're.
After DCT, you're trying. This is a kind of, again, a real trajectory, right? And you're trying to first find that Hilbert envelope, so as.
So input to the DCT is the speech, or like your.
This is a speech.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Just starting with.
No, but here what I want to say is really that. It's not part of Hilbert envelope, it's part of the DCT signal. So
yeah, maybe then
it's not, it's enough if you have just this phase and the Hilbert envelope, you can put it together. You don't need the carrier. I mean, this is kind of carrier signal, but in different domain represented.
Yeah, it's in frequency domain.
So what I think is that we really need to apply this kind of analysis by synthesis approach in order to
get something. That makes sense, because it's a time domain sort of approach. In fact, it's what you're doing is so different to most approaches to speech coding that it doesn't matter that we don't know much about.
No.
It's quite different to a lot of the traditional sort of. Source filter type approaches
that's maybe even the advantage here, because it's not speech based, which means
it's just a matter of minimum distortion type.
Right. So you can, when I tried and comparing with RPC-10 on a twice bigger or higher bitrate, this works better, it seems to me, just for unvoiced speech. I'm not mentioning voiceless,
unvoiced.
Because that's unvoiced.
Unvoiced speech is very difficult to sort of judge quality compared to.
Yeah,
voice
but when you hear and try to hear some examples with the music, for example.
Yeah, plosives are very important, role, I guess.
Right. Yeah.
So maybe it does a better job of plosives.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Yeah. But anyway, it seemed to me pretty good.
It'd be nice if we had some demos.
That's right.
Well, I suppose I have to wait till your time, I guess.
So when's your 10?
It should be 13 December.
Oh, bugger.
I just.
I won't be here.
You won't be here.
No. You'll practice it before then, won't you?
Okay. No, I just swapped it with Mike Perro, I think, because he's not going to be here.
Yeah,
this time.
He's going to us.
And
yeah.
I was supposed to have it in January, so whatever. Anyway, so. But anyway, I wanted to hear something maybe from you, what you were doing with speech coding, because you mentioned that.
I did, yeah, but we're doing a more traditional frequency slices rather than temporal based stuff.
But it was based on, like, you were using kind of recognizer there, right?
Yeah, well, that was one of the approaches, sure. Yeah, and the other approach was this HMM based stuff, which is basically just a parameterization of the, you know, the source filter type parameters,
uh-huh.
and then learning the, you know, training
right.
the speech recognition system,
right.
But that's not terribly. That's got no relationship to this.
Yeah, it's
yeah.
it's different, but speech coding at least.
Yeah, sure, speech coding. I read some of the other techniques, or standards, but I mean, I think you're on the right track with analysis by synthesis, but. That doesn't tell you what sort of bit rates you're going to achieve, or
right, yeah, sure.
And because you have to do it separately for each
band,
mm.
right?
Would be the, I imagine that's the tricky part, because it would be varying quite rapidly, wouldn't it? Your codebook, like you're within each
with different
when you go along the 1 second. Sort of segment of the band.
Maybe what we can already do is to decrease this distance. We can do a Hilbert envelope approximation with 1 second, but then we can split that signal into, I don't know, 10 segments
yeah.
with 100 milliseconds or even less, and we can apply some error technique for that, you know.
Well, I mean, yeah, first you've got to choose your approach and not worry about the bandwidth.
Right.
And
then
start thinking about how to given, because
yeah.
I mean, I guess, especially because this is a more of a commercial based project, you've got to match the quality before you start worrying about other things, right? I mean, do they? I mean, what sort of?
More or less, they don't care what will be the quality or the bitrate. They just want to get something new, you know.
Oh, okay.
So if you get the very low bitrate with reasonable quality or very high bitrate. Which is again different, but with high quality, they
yeah.
will be happy with the both.
Okay.
So, you know, on one side it's pretty good, but on the other you don't know which way you should go.
Yeah, sure.
And
at the moment you're at sort of a point where maybe you have to make that choice a little
right,
bit.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, there you go.
Yeah.
Do you want to mention your speech coding experiments?
No.
So you were saying that you were doing something in India with the
yeah, but it's mostly like this SELP and this.
So you know the SELP, like.
No, I was doing some like writing some code for testing and these things. So I'm making some standards.
Yeah.
For that, so.
Which is
so there are like the thing the standards how it works is like they give all the pseudo code kind of thing and then
yeah
they put severe test conditions so you have to pass those test conditions like
oh yeah
then
okay.
you can say okay we implemented this MP
yeah. Although standards depending on what standard you're dealing with sometimes it can be quite
yeah.
ambiguous right I mean all
yeah.
the latest MPEG standards
yeah.
are basically this is the
yeah.
container we don't care how you do it right but
yeah.
it's got to fit inside this
right
this
right.
sort of this sort
so
of format
really, even the standards they give the test signals also you can't really do it on whatever database you have
okay
right.
and then
so
you
have
to
use
and then you have to do MOS
yeah.
Testing
yeah it's more like yeah, they define so I did for some even Echo Cancer also there also they define what is the overlap speech condition everything they define so
okay.
you need
right.
to follow all those
I see.
Yes, this industry is again different. Like
yeah, but it's quite interesting with even with current speech coding technologies. They are still trying to use SELP or those RP.
Yeah, I think they're using only SELP.
There is nothing new, more or less.
Well,
and when I was listening the talk of Milan Jelinek, he's the Czech guy, but he lives in Canada. I don't know the name of the university, but they have the pattern, I think, for kelp even or.
Okay.
Kelp is from AT&T, no?
I don't know how it is exactly, but they got
the
very,
all this
very famous for this, for that cell.
Yeah.
What they did exactly, I don't know if something different a little bit or not. Or they just keep those patterns or.
Okay.
I don't know how it is exactly. Maybe Hine will know much more, but. When I heard those, the presentation, they didn't do so much new. I mean,
it was
last year, and I think Hine, he was asking, so what's new that you are so famous with that? And they said, okay, we know exactly how to do that. I mean, you know, not to make any errors, like in because everybody knows how to do that, but it's not so easy to implement it, right? There is nothing so much new. Right?
Yeah, that's the main
what's,
thing.
What's new is in the transmission medium, like
you know,
new like higher bandwidth transmission, or like packetized based transmission, and all that sort of thing. Where they're not so much looking at the algorithm, but so much as how to incorporate the algorithm within a new transmission sort of medium.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, if you see a lot of papers on like
voice over IP
or whatever, the publications are sort of like, how do we deal with packet loss, or how is it affected
by packet loss?
And
but then they are still using like error signal, which is going to be approximated by codebook, right?
Yeah, sure.
And linear prediction, which is which is approximating just the spectrum, for months and everything. That's all. So.
Yeah. And again, a lot of this stuff, like where even when I was working, mostly that company was developing for voice over IP. So they had to put all these things on again DSPs, and also it's mostly how many LPCs are, it's still optimization, and then.
But even that's less of a big deal now, right? Because all of them
are again, they're also becoming, even the memories are not really.
Not really. You can throw MATLAB on a mobile phone these days.
So even I think, then you can have whatever bandwidth is. It's not really.
Well, I hope that we still have a lot of time for that, because.
But no, I think but still then that's what maybe people are going towards science sort of modeling. No? Like I was before when the bandwidth conditions were really stringent and they were using all the LPC based.
For example, when I was harmonic noise modeling, that H&M system which is used for synthesis models.
Yeah.
It's pretty interesting. I mean it's good.
If you want you can look at his code and
but
only
his code implemented.
Yeah.
Right.
It wasn't perfect. There was a little bit of bugs with some of the phase matching, but it was pretty hard to tell that it was not perfect unless you heard the samples sort of next to one another, so that's not too bad.
But definitely it's better than coded speech, not different.
Oh, sure,
yeah. Really.
And I
mean, how much you can get compressed is, like what you're telling is you can do all these tricks, like,
The only trick is the phase, and we've got a student starting in January who's going to start working on how to actually efficiently parameterize the...
In sinusoidal modeling?
Yeah. And I think we've got a number of ideas for the spectrum that's easily enough handled just using standard techniques. But
anyway, do you know exactly how it is done when you really have those MFCC coefficients, which means magnitude spectrum, and then you are trying to reconcile the speech?
Without phase?
Without the phase.
I've got no idea.
I reviewed one paper. Like,
I'm a little confused about it. I don't know.
Maybe you can look at dates from...
University of East Anglia.
University of East Anglia.
It's near the sort of Cambridge side of England.
I can forward you. They're doing a lot of tricks there. Like they're again training Gaussian mixtures for different frequencies, and then.
You know, but there are some algorithms which were quite...
much more mathematical.
Just
basically doing a search through or stuff like that, don't they?
Those things are again based on LPC, no? Like maybe
it seems to me, something like that.
Because
like
the pitch estimation in X waves or these things.
You know, what you can do...
dynamic programming based on LPC analysis.
What you can do is take just the minimum phase of which you can get from a linear prediction, right?
Yeah,
you know what I mean, minimum phase signal.
And then construct.
Yeah.
And it sounds quite reasonable that you can, but of course, still, it's not original at all. So, I don't know how they do that exactly.
Yeah.
I have no idea.
Yeah, again, like, no, the problem is different for everybody. Like, these guys, what they're doing for distributed speech recognition mainly.
Yeah,
right,
which,
right.
Where so you've only got the MFCCs.
The MFCCs, so.
I think it was to do with Aurora or something?
Yeah, CTSA or something, European standard.
For Aurora, we didn't do anything.
Even it's kind of Aurora framework, so.
Okay.
Yeah, but
yeah.
We didn't do any speech recognition.
No, but now
it's
bit for.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah,
now
it was for saying, say you've got someone who has, you know, they want to dispute that this is what they actually said.
Right.
By the recognition, and the recognition network was wrong, and you owe me money or whatever. And then they can say, well, we've reconstructed your speech from the speech input to the speech recognizer. Hey, voila, it sounds like you. I mean, obviously, there's a lot more to it than that. There's a lot of sort of, well,
right.
Does the quality stand up
right.
to legal sort of requirements
right.
or whatever?
But even at this point, they're planning to use for standard GSM or this? It's not that?
I know, but there's a separate set of standards, I think, for speech recognition.
ETS, European.
Which I think requires, you know, that states the information they can send is this. So I don't know if you can actually tack on any extra phase information. You have to deal with what you're given. So.
Yeah. Yeah, all these standards are really.
I don't know. I it would be interesting. Maybe that's the best approach to look with. To begin with, is just pretend all you have got is.
You mean with this face?
Yeah.
Sure.
Because you can also interpolate the pitch information from the spectrum as well.
Yeah, they do some.
They do that.
Kind of reconstruction of pitch.
Yeah. So I mean, maybe try to see how good you can go without transmitting any.
Right.
Of that information.
But the quality again from
the pitch was really good. I thought I didn't think you could really.
No, again European standards. What they give is they give the MFCCs and they give the pitch.
Yeah.
Then you have to construct the thing.
Yeah.
But if you have MFCCs, then like again you have to get the higher order MFCCs and then.
Yeah, but
then
the
then
thing is, if it's mel scaled, if you have a mel scale, you get quite fine reconstruction of the spectrum at the lower frequencies, which is what you need for reconstruction of the pitch anyway.
Right. Yeah.
So I mean, if you wanted to transmit with fewer bands, you'd maybe still keep the lower bands, or or maybe you could still transmit the pitch. The pitch isn't that big a deal, but it'd be nice if you didn't, because then I mean it's worth giving it a go, and then maybe seeing what information you can add to the data stream to improve performance.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah.
I don't know.
Okay.
That'd be cool.
So how about you?
I've never done any coding in my life, so I just have one curiosity. So this is coding, then you code the speech, then you're supposed to transmit the speech, right?
Yeah.
Let's say in GSM or something else.
Yeah.
I remember when I was doing some image processing, there were techniques for compressing and then coding, so adding channel information on the image at the same time in order to save some bits.
You mean like channel and source coding together?
Exactly.
I don't know.
I was just wondering if there's someone was doing it with speech as well.
Well, I can imagine kind of like JPEG operations, which might be almost like source coding and maybe also channel coding, because it's just smoothly.
Well, actually, when you compress, you compress the signal, right? And then you add some complexity to the signal in order to recover the error.
Right.
So I was wondering if by any chance there was something like this in speech, with the speech.
I don't know.
You know?
I don't know so much about channel coding, like those Hofmann coding stuff.
It's just easy enough. But
it's just standard technique.
It's not the most difficult.
Yeah, sure. That's where I stopped. Run length encoding, I'm out of here.
But I think again, it's different, no? Like these standards again, all these GSM standards.
Yeah,
maybe they have
exactly.
the compression standards and again,
yeah,
sure. coding standard. But maybe I
this was the problem actually, because you were.
I don't remember anything like they're doing combine.
Not in GSM, definitely.
Even normal G17 and normal speech coder. So they have the speech coding standards again. They have the channel coding.
Then
standards.
They have some.
Yeah. So it's
source. So
Yeah.
Okay. Just
I mean, I think they do try to. I mean, obviously, the techniques they choose are supposed to be less you know, susceptible to coding.
Yeah,
errors,
definitely.
You know, but I mean, that's maybe the limit to that.
Yeah. Again,
yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
I think
so.
Good.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys. Anyway, if you find some good paper which you know.
Yeah, I told you, no, that.
There was that
Milner, like, yeah, you can say.
Waveform
prototyping is different. I was suggesting like this. But that's again totally. Did you hear that Bastian Klein's. You know, he's really fun to get in speech coding like this. He proposed one prototype waveform.
Okay.
Like, they take the signal and then they project into two-dimensional and then they take the faces. And it's like prototypes, kind of wavelets you can see. Like,
okay.
But it's not exactly wavelets. So they take slow-moving waveforms, slow-moving signal,
yeah.
And like fast-moving, and then they combine. So it's like. So you project signal into two-dimensional space and then separate the slow-moving parts and fast-moving
kind
parts.
Of capstrom or something like that?
No, this is like they call it prototype.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's...
Sounds a bit that way, doesn't it?
So now people mostly use it for like residual length coding. Like, so even suppose
yeah.
if you have the LPC, then you can use this technique for residual
Oh, that's quite
compression.
Interesting.
Yeah, so...
That'd be good for me.
Yeah,
exactly.
You can really get good qualities with 4 kilo.
So that was the
waveform
coding which you
prototype.
Gave me, the prototype coding
yeah.
paper?
Yeah. But so people can use at waveform level or at residual level. So if you're
uh-huh.
using LPC, you can use at residual level. You can see residual as
right.
some signal. So it's really... So in residual, you can clearly see whether it's fast moving
yeah,
or like
yeah.
in all these points.